Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the iSports MSU Red Cedar Report podcast. The Red Cedar Report is part of iSportsWeb.com. Be sure to check out that website for the latest in sports news and opinions. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter to listen to our past shows. Today on the show, Mike Sterner is going to join me as we talk about the latest regarding Draymond Green, his role in the playoffs, and what he means to the Golden State Warriors. Plus, there was a little bit of controversy. Not 100% sure if you heard about what was going on. If we have time, we'll talk about Tom Izzo's latest attempt to lure Taurean Thompson away from the East Coast. Plus, Scott Moore, who is the voice of Michigan State Baseball for the Spartan Sports Network. He's going to join us from Omaha, Nebraska, as we get primed for tomorrow's game against Nebraska as the Spartans open up the Big Ten tournament at 2 o'clock. We're waiting on Scott right now. Mike, how are you?
Good. How are you doing, Tyler?
I'm doing well. Let's start off with this Draymond Green situation. Everybody knows what happened by now. Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals. He may have, Stanley, depending on your point of view, Steven Adams in an area you are not supposed to hit him. Game 2, he also tried a Euro step on Steven Adams, where it ended with the same result. Mike, let's get your thoughts on this, because a lot of it is whether or not he did it on purpose, whether or not it was an accident. And apparently, based upon the NBA's ruling, they thought it was an accident.
Well, in all honesty, I don't think you can really rule on intent. It's impossible to know Draymond Green's state of mind at that time. You can go ahead and say his facial expression was this, his all this, and you're just picking for cherries at that point. But I honestly don't think the NBA did rule on intent. I think they ruled on one. I think it's, they're never going to admit to this, but they're ruling on the fact that this is a crucial game for this series, and, you know, they want this series to go as long as it can, and they want the Warriors to win, probably, more than likely, for the ratings piece. But that's not going to happen if Draymond Green's not playing tonight, or the chances of it happening go down significantly. So I think that had a lot to do with it. But I also think that even outside of that, it's impossible to rule on intent, because you just cannot. I mean, Draymond Green's going to, of course, he's going to tell you he didn't intend to do it. He didn't mean to do it. But, you know, whether Draymond's telling the truth or not, we don't know. We can never truly know that. So if anything, they're ruling on, as I said, this is a whole ratings thing, or on top of it, they can rule on if it's a basketball play or if it's a, if it's a safety hazard, they can rule on things like that. But at the same time, this is a very tough thing to rule on. The only thing I disagreed with is that clearly there's a lack of consistency in the ruling when Dante Jones gets suspended for a game for really looking, if you want to talk about something that looked lesser than Draymond Green's, Dante Jones's looked lesser than Green's. If you suspend him for one game, you probably got to suspend anybody for one game for a similar thing. I think that they made a mistake there, and if anything, that's where you can criticize the NBA on this ruling.
Yeah, and I mean, kind of like what you were saying, there is a couple ways to look at it. One, you can suspend him because there was a precedent that was set in Game 2, even though the Game 2 thing looked to be 100% accidental. I think we can both agree on that, right?
Yeah, but like I said, at the same time, it's so hard to know intent. So
I don't know.
I would say it looks that way, but at the same time, I don't know.
And so you either get them because there's a precedent for it, but on the other hand, you do let him go. He is one of the top. He's probably, I'd say, the second most important piece on that Golden State team. If you get him out for a crucial game 4 in Oklahoma City, you can pretty much call it curtains for the NBA 73-win team. And
lose out on an opportunity to see a 73-win team against LeBron, which I believe is what anyone outside of Oklahoma wants or anyone outside of Canada wants. We are going to take a break from this topic of conversation as Scott Moore, voice of Michigan State Baseball for the Spartan Sports Network, the best boss I've ever had, he's going to join us right now. Scott, how are you doing?
Oh, flattery will get you everywhere, Tyler.
I know. I learned from the master. thanks again for coming on. Let's talk about the Spartans right now with their regular season. At the end of the season, they struggled a little bit. They had the best start in school history. Yeah, 5-6. A little bit of a slump lately, 9-12 throughout their last 21, 3-7 in their last 10. What exactly happened?
Well, it's almost like a bunch of the hitters went into a slump at the same time. And that's one of the things that can happen with a baseball team. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
so tenuous as to, you know, everybody has to be doing everything at the same time on the same page. And it's almost like, you know, 5 or 6 of the big guys hit slumps. Now, a few of them are starting to break out of those slumps now, and so that's a good sign going into this tournament. And the pitching has been great early, and it's been good lately, but not great lately. So, you know, that's the other side of it, too, is that the starting pitching has to get them, you know, through to the 7th or 8th inning.
From what I know, Cam View is going to be the starter for tomorrow against Nebraska. He's obviously had a little bit of a struggle over his last couple outings. He came in on senior day against Maryland. Can you talk about how he can get back to where he started the season and what was the key to his success earlier on in the season?
Well, one of the things that my broadcast partner, Jake Boss Sr., says is, you know, you have to pitch with confidence. And confidence is a fleeting thing. You know, sometimes you got it and sometimes something goes wrong and then you don't have it. What happened with Cam, he was going along lights out. He had a 9-inning complete game against Purdue, middle of the Big Ten season. And then before his start against Michigan, he felt a little soreness in the left shoulder. And he just was not the same pitcher in that outing against Michigan. You could see it. The slider just was not breaking the way it normally did. And he didn't have the command that he had previously in the season. And so it's taken a little bit of time for him to get rid of that soreness. Now, I discount the outing that we saw against Maryland completely because Cam is always has been a starter. And to try to come in out of the bullpen is a completely different critter. And whether you know it's coming or not, it's just different. And so I really don't read anything into what we saw against Maryland. What I look into is there's been progress every start since that since the bad Michigan start. And so, you know, that's what I'm looking for, is to see that progress continue.
All right. So then you touched on the bats a little bit, how they've gone into a slump. Who do you think is the key for getting these bats going again? I know we saw in the first game against Maryland that 9th inning, a little bit of a comeback, still came up short, but bat hitting is contagious. So who do you think would be the guy that can spark this team? Is it a guy like Jordan Zimmermann? Is it the seniors? Who is it?
Well, Jordan Zimmermann has been pulling his weight and then some most of the season. I mean, this is a kid that finished as the top batting average in Big Ten play in the entire conference. So, you know, and he's up in the 390s for his batting average in conference games. So, you know, he's been very consistent most of the year. He's had a couple of down weeks lately. Down weeks for him, which means he's hitting around 325, 350.
Yeah.
It's still pretty darn good. But what has – so Jordan Zimmerman, he's okay. Brandon Hughes is starting to round back into shape. He had a great weekend against Maryland, so, you know, he's in good shape. One of the keys to it is Dan Durkin at second base. He kind of has been in a funk lately, and we saw him start to get better swings as that last weekend went on. So he's going to be somebody that we need to keep an eye on. And Matt Byers, who has been doing yeoman's duty. I mean, this kid came in. He's a junior transfer from Community College in Illinois. And he came in intending to have him be the backup catcher to Chad Roskelly. And then Chad had knee issues early in the season. And so Matt has caught something like 47 or 48 straight games without having really a break in there. And there was one game that Chad caught after he, was back from his injury, but Matt was the designated hitter in that game. So he's been playing every single day. And I think that has been part of his issue, is that he's just been working so hard. Catching
yep.
is so much harder, because you're involved in every single pitch. You're down there squatting, it's tough on the legs, tough on the knees. And if the lower half of your body isn't right when you're at the plate, you're going to suffer. And so his swings have not been good lately. So he's another guy the Spartans really need to get back on track.
Again, Scott Moore, who does play-by-play for the Michigan State baseball team, is talking about MSU as they're ready for the Big Ten tournament tomorrow. Scott, you're with the team right now in Omaha. You just had lunch with them, to the best of my knowledge. What's the mindset like throughout the team with how important this Big Ten tournament is given the expectations after the first half of the season?
Well, there's no question about it. I think everybody on this team understands what the job is, that if they want to continue to play next week, that they have to go through and run the table here. But with that being said, that is not at the top of anybody's mind right now. The coaches do a great job of stressing there is one game in front of us. We have one game to play, and then there'll be another game after that, but we're not talking about that one yet. Everything goes into this one game because you have to win this first game. It's a double elimination tournament. If you lose the first game, you still have another chance, but it makes your road so much harder because all of these teams are set up for three starting pitchers and then some spot duty for mid-league games. And if you win your first two games, you get Friday off. And then you get back to action on Saturday, and you get a chance to rest your team, you get a chance to rest your pitchers. If you're coming back out of the loser's bracket, you can wind up playing five games in this tournament instead of four. And you have to play on Friday. You could have a doubleheader on Saturday. It's just, it's so much of a harder road to come back out of that loser's bracket. So the main thing first thing in everybody's head is tomorrow's game against Nebraska. That's our season right now. And that's going to be tough to do. That's going to be tough to do because that whole stadium is going to be red and white.
Yeah,
and that takes us to the next question now. You said they need to run the table, but they obviously do need to focus on Nebraska first. They went 1-2 in East Lansing against the Huskers. How do they survive Nebraska tomorrow?
Well, it's going to be very important for this team to get a lead. They've got to get out in that first inning and get something done. They're going to be the visiting team. And so they're going to have the first at-bat. And to get something on the scoreboard quickly is going to be very important because this team plays better with a lead than they do coming from behind. I mean, that's common. That happens with everybody. Mm-hmm. It's easier to play when you have the lead. Very similar to the series at Iowa where Brandon Hughes went yard on the first pitch of the game. And it wasn't exactly a cakewalk, but they won that game going away. The other two games, Iowa scored first, and then you had to kind of struggle and get back into it. So, I mean, I'm not saying that we're going to have a repeat of that, although 2 years ago, Cam Gibson did, as the leadoff batter in the very first game, hit one over the right field fence. So that it would be great to start it out that way, that's for sure.
All right. Hey, that was the voice of Michigan State Baseball for Spartan Sports Network, Scott Moore. Scott, we know you got to get going. Have fun in Omaha and have a good time calling the game tomorrow. We'll look for that home run on the first pitch.
Okay. Guys, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. Again, that was Scott Moore, who does play-by-play for the Michigan State baseball team. He is down there in Omaha. Mike, when tomorrow, obviously, he said it is a double elimination. Is this still going to be a successful season for Michigan State baseball if they do not make it to the tournament after how they started?
I would say it really depends on how they fight in this Big Ten tournament. If they go in and they win a couple games and they put up a fight, I think that it could still be considered a successful season. Is it disappointing to some level? For sure, because you thought halfway through the season you were a lock for the tournament. You really did feel that way. And, you know, when you win games 3 out of 4 against Michigan, that's a big deal. That's pretty successful. But it is certainly so I think there's things you can take out and say, this is very successful, and you can build for next year. One thing that's for certain about this team is that it's a very young team. You only had 3 seniors on the roster, one of which, PJ Nowak, did not play that much. He was kind of a guy who would come in and pinch run and not do too much. And then you really only had one guy that started the whole season that was a senior, Justin Hovis, at third base. So building on to next year, I think you can be happy with the fact that you have a very young ball club. You're building for next season. Now, the thing with baseball is that you do have some questions there. A few of these guys have been being scouted by the pros, and they can choose to go out. We had 8 Spartans drafted in the MLB draft last year, which was an all-time high for the program. And you're going to have Cam View, for instance, is getting scouted pretty highly by pros. So that really will factor into it as well. But I think knowing that you have some youth, you have some talent coming back, and that you competed this year, that's successful, but there's certainly disappointment if they don't go out and win this tournament and get themselves a bid into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and I mean, the one thing you can't take away, obviously you said that they are young, and some of it may be looked at as a building block for next year, but I mean, and we've kind of talked about this before, is what Jake Boss has done with this program. I mean, you talk about the improvement of Michigan State from the second they got Tom Izzo in basketball. You talk about, obviously, the new topic of conversation is team under Mark D'Antonio year in, year out. And to a much quieter note, you're seeing it with the baseball team.
Yes, absolutely. It's harder to compete. And I would say Jake Boss's job is a lot harder than Mark D'Antonio and Tom Izzo's job is, just from the standpoint that when you talk about the gap that exists between the SEC and the ACC compared to, like, the Big Ten in baseball, it is so big. It's almost comparable to, like, the MAC in the Big Ten in football. That's really where it's at. And so you don't really have – not to undermine what Tom Izzo or Mark D'Antonio have done in any way, but at the same time, he's got to compete with that. He's got to compete with the fact that he's got to tell some of his guys, we may not play all of our games, but we just, you know, we can't control the weather in Michigan. We can't control Big Ten weather. And he's got to compete with the fact that our facilities are not as good as the teams down south. They just can't be because those other teams, baseball is a really, really big deal down there. Even a team like Nebraska, where you know, drawing 6,000 fans a game sometimes is not a huge deal. You can't even fit 6,000 people. You can't even fit a third of that in McLean. So that's a big deal, and that's hard. It's hard to recruit that way. So he really has done a pretty good job at Michigan State as boss. And the fact that, you know, the fact that it's very quiet tells you something too. You know, it's, of course, baseball doesn't have the hype that football and basketball do in the college ranks. But at the same time, you know, the amount of hurdles he's had to overcome are tremendous. So if this team gets to the tournament any year or competes for the Big Ten any year, that's a big deal.
Yeah, and I mean, you kind of wonder how much further along this program would be to this point, if it would have sped up the process at all, if he did make it a couple years back. Obviously, there was a little bit of controversy, if you will, about the fact that Michigan State probably should have been in the tournament, and ultimately they didn't get selected. But it's got to help, and, I mean, right now, you kind of said it, how you can't really compete with the SEC and ACC because they can play baseball year-round down there, or even Nebraska. But so you kind of have to set the level of goals the way – the levels of goals the way Mark Antonio does. Your first goal every year, beat Michigan. Then it goes to win the Big Ten. Then it, you know, grows from there, making tournaments, going further in tournaments, and then eventually it's going to be winning the whole thing. And right now, well, Jake Voss, he won 3-4 against Michigan this year.
Yeah, he's setting their goals, and he's done a pretty good job as the coach at Michigan State. Word on the street is that they'll be adding lights to the stadium within the next couple of years, which is a big deal because Michigan State's one of the only Big Ten programs that cannot play night games right now, and that puts a hamper on things too, you know, when you talk about things like recruiting and stuff. Kids want to play under the lights, and, you know, it's easier for parents to be able to get to games if their kid can play under the lights. You know, it's just more accessible. So those are big deals, and that's what Michigan State's going to try to sell, additions to the facilities. I think that'll be big in the coming years. And then, like you said, competing for the Big Ten is a big step. You've only won one Big Ten title this century. So you'd like to, when you talk about the 2000s era, so you'd like to add another one of those to the table if you can. And that's probably a realistic goal within the next couple of years, having this young squad getting better at recruiting, improving the facilities.
Yeah. We are going to take the last 5 minutes here to talk about what we initially started with the Draymond Green controversy. And as I was saying before, God bless us with his presence, is you can look at it one of two ways. Is there was a precedent that, or the NBA could have looked at it as, you know what, it was an elaborate flail to try to draw a whistle. I'm not going to go as far as flopping. I think we've seen flopping mastered when Tristan Thompson inadvertently elbowed LeBron James in game 3, I believe, of that series.
Yes.
And so, yeah. So, and one of the things is you look at this little war of words between Draymond Green and Russell Westbrook as we head into tonight's game. And Draymond Green kind of brought up a very interesting point. If you look at Westbrook's history more than anything else, is the leg kick has kind of become an extension of getting fouled. Now, as a lot of people do it to try to sell the fouls, and Bruce Bowen said it, and I think Bruce Bowen says And he goes, all he was trying to do was get the whistle. The kick was on purpose. The location of the kick was not.
Yep. And that's an interesting thing, too, because Bowen was one of the best defenders the NBA has seen in recent memory. So for him to openly acknowledge that is a big deal to me, because he's playing defense as well as anybody. So he understands what offensive players are trying to do to draw a foul.
Yeah, my favorite part about it, though, is the fact that Russell Westbrook was the one who stepped up. It wasn't Stephen Adams, it was Westbrook. And if you look at Westbrook's history, remember a play, Joey Crawford called a foul on Chris Paul. Paul was just trying to run in front of Westbrook to distract him from a three-point shot. Westbrook not only kicked his leg forward, like Allen Iverson always had a history of doing, but he also kicked it out into the right. And he was able to hit Chris Paul on the knee or the thigh or something like that. And the refs called a whistle on Paul for bumping into Westbrook while he was shooting. And so when Green comes out and says, hey, Westbrook was part of the group of stars that created these excessive movements when you're getting fouled, I mean, I think he has a point, and I understand that this is a Michigan State podcast, so we might be looking at this with some bias. But you can go back and you can look at Westbrook's history. There was a game against San Antonio. He was driving the lane, and he kicked out his right leg for defense, and he hit Tim Duncan, the same spot where Draymond Green hit Stephen Adams.
Yeah.
So
it is a fair point to bring up.
So many ways to look at this, and so I think it made it that much harder, like you said, to judge the intent of Draymond Green. And you can't take him out in such a crucial series because of that.
Yeah, I would say the most frustrating thing, and this is a fair point for people to make, is that the NBA is lacking consistency when they suspend Dante Jones of Cleveland with his, you know, his knuckle going into a groin area, whereas you don't suspend Green. I think that's a good criticism, but that's on the NBA. You have to be consistent. I believe you got to be consistent. I know that Draymond Green's one of the best players there is in the game right now, but you gotta be consistent across the board. If you're gonna suspend Jones, you gotta suspend Green, or you just gotta not suspend either of them. So that's a fair criticism. But intent and all this other stuff, we can argue this until the cows come home, and it doesn't matter because you cannot prove these things. It's impossible to prove these things. So you have to go based upon some other standards, and whatever the standards the NBA went based upon, they decided that a fine was sufficient and that suspending Green was not the right idea.
Well, based upon the clock that I have in front of me, the cows are coming home right now. So be sure to check out the show next time. Anthony Iani, he's going to join us as he talks about his continued push to raise awareness for autism. He's going to talk about what it was like playing with Draymond Green a little bit. Plus, we are going to be talking a little bit about, I'd say, one of the biggest needs in recent memory for Michigan State, Taurean Thompson. If Tom Izzo can land him, Michigan State basketball, things are in for a real treat next year. That does it for us today. Thanks, Scott Moore, for filling us in on the happenings surrounding the Michigan State baseball team as they get ready for the Big Ten tournament. And good luck to them tomorrow. If you want more Big Ten tournament details, be sure to check out our colleague Nick Torrey's preview on iSportsWeb.com. For Mike Sterner, I'm Tyler Hayward. This was the iSports MSU Red Cedar Report.